Defend the program, defend the sound, and not the sound of podcast to do to. Kick the program and drink the burn, nerds defend the multiverse. Under the sound of the program and the multiple the burn, comic soup, or under the name of the drunk, the sound of burn, the bork dark. And the burn, the friendly friendship part, the visioner, the burn. The burn is easy, the smart to turn, the burn the friend of burn, bigot, nerd to share by the arm. Fork, 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 fork.
I'm using that one. Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom. From comics and video games to science and technology, if it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Jess.
Hey, I'm Doug.
And I'm Boar.
And this is the kind of Nerdy Show episode we do every other week, where we talk about literally everything. All the stuff that's happened in between then and now, we're talking about it all across the nerd multiverse. But first, Boar has brought us some refreshments today.
Yeah, I brought a new version of Soylent that just came out, Soylent 2.0. It comes in liquid this time instead of powder.
Now, Soylent is a futuristic meal replacement, not the famed science fiction drink made from people or food.
Correct, yeah. It's designed as a meal replacement. So, in theory, you could just eat nothing but Soylent.
Why? How? That doesn't seem even remotely healthy, regardless of the nutrients. You can't just eat vitamins.
Liquid diets are a thing. It just depends on, like, if you have a certain medical condition or if you're about to go into surgery. I mean, I'm not saying if you are going to go into surgery, drink this. Don't do that. Don't eat or drink anything before you go into surgery. But there are certain conditions where you may be in a situation. Like, let's say you're in a coma and they can't force feed you food. They can give you this.
Right.
And it can give you the same nutrients as eating a meal, but not having to actually eat solid food.
Right.
But this is liquid form. Do we actually eat it then?
No, you
eating?
Drink it.
Yeah, we're not eating
it. It's not
anymore.
Chewy going
you
down.
You consume it. Yeah. It's like the way I first heard it pitched to me was forget about Soylent Green. This is more of the goop that you'd have in the Matrix if you're in the Matrix. But it actually is something you would want to drink, and it's not weird slop.
So if eating food doesn't really mean much to you and you just want to get through the day and do your 24-hour human cycle of batshit crazy 21st century hacking all the ice, you know, in the mainframes, stuff, right?
Boar, you know more about it than me. So am I wrong in saying that it can also work as like a diet for you to actually lose weight quickly because it's less calories than like a standard meal?
It can be. I mean, you can gorge yourself on this and get fat, too.
But it's like, who's going to want to drink like, you know, 12 gallons, you know?
To your point on the Matrix, it does taste a little bit like Tasty Wheat by default.
Like Tasty Wheat or like a chicken?
Okay, well, Boar, this is Soylent 2.0, and you've actually been doing Soylent for a while since
early days. Yeah, I had it since 1.0. The powder stuff is great. I always felt really super energized, and almost all of the Soylent that I've had so far, whenever you drink it, it makes you feel like you're high on nutrition is the best way that I can even describe that.
What? How?
Because, like, when was the last time that you had a meal that was 100% balanced? Had every single nutrient that your body needs, according to science anyway.
Probably never. I don't think I've ever tracked that before.
Most vitamins nowadays are like more than 100% your daily value or recommended intake. This is like...
Right.
And
like, say you go and eat, some pizza or something. That's not going to have everything you need in it.
Well, that's crazy talk. That's got bread. It's got dairy. It's got meat. It's got vegetables.
That's the food pyramid right there.
It might not have vegetables, though. I mean...
Mines do. Plural, on account of all the pizzas.
Right, but when I first started it out, it would really just perk me up and keep me really energized for several hours and just kind of make you feel like a superhero almost. It's really
weird.
Do
you feel full like you ate a meal?
Yeah, totally.
So what meal did you usually replace with? Like breakfast or lunch? Or
typically breakfast and lunch. I've been doing about 2/3 replacement, so I'll still eat one normal meal a day just so I can feel like a person, I guess.
Well, because eating is still fun.
Right.
Well, it has to be fun, right? I mean, what excites me about this is like eating for me a lot of times is a chore. Like I'm a lazy chewer. Like I'm just like, I'm not really full, but I'm tired of chewing. Salads are the bane of my existence because they just take forever to eat. And so if I can have something like this where I can just chug it down real quick and then be good to go.
Right, right. I felt that way too. And that was actually a big motivating factor for me to try this in the first place, was to eliminate the chore of eating.
Why isn't the government subsidize this already? Just get back to work.
Because it doesn't have corn
in it. As soon as
you
can.
No corn.
You can add corn to it.
You can add corn to it.
Well, I hear that Soylent is best cold, so we've got samples here. We have regular and also...
yeah, I gave you all a sample of the unflavored version of it, so you could taste like the base flavor. A lot of... Well, I'll let you guys try it first, and then I'll tell you what a lot of people describe it as.
Okay. That's human taste.
Hmm. It kind of tastes like the unfrosted ass end of a mini wheat.
Unfrosted ass end of a mini wheat. Okay.
Yeah.
I would say it's like the milk at the end of your cereal, like after cereal.
That is
like
exactly how most people describe it.
It also smells like it a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's familiar. It's not weird.
Yeah, and I said ass end only because, you know, obviously as we've seen with the computer animation, the front of the mini wheat is the part with the talking face on it. That was good.
Surprisingly pleasant. I was not expecting it to actually taste good.
I could totally drink that as a meal replacement just fine and absolutely. Not be like, oh, kill me already. I just want a burger so bad. But
actually, I don't usually eat breakfast, so this is probably better than not eating breakfast at all.
Oh, it's way better than not eating breakfast.
Yeah.
Can confirm.
So now we've got this chocolate version.
Yeah, I added a little bit of chocolate syrup to this one. Okay.
Thank you for also saying syrup. Everyone tells me that I'm wrong, and it's
supposed to be just syrup. Straight up delicious.
Yeah, I mean that's chocolate milk.
Yeah,
but like better a little.
Yeah,
because I'm not a huge milk fan.
No, it's like
it's thicker
in a good way. It's like melted chocolate ice cream.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I've also got one that is more like a mocha, like coffee chocolate fusion. Damn, if either of you want to try that.
I will try it, because then this will definitely be my breakfast replacement. I don't even need to drink a coffee anymore. It's just all in one drink.
See, I actually add, it's an instant espresso powder and chocolate syrup to mine for breakfast, and that really gets you going in the morning.
I bet it does.
I want to do this before every recording.
We should do some kind of study. Is this recording now better that we've energized ourselves with Soylent 2.0?
Tell us in the comments. Is this more entertaining?
So it does have kind of like a... I mentioned, I'm not a big milk drinker, but it does have kind of like a that thing that happens to your throat after drinking milk, like kind of filmy like deal. Is there actually milk in this? There's no dairy content. It's vegan, right?
Yeah. This version of Soylent is vegan.
The other one wasn't.
The first versions could be, but you had to leave out. It was a combination of a powder packet and an oil. A little vial of oil that came with each packet. So the vial of oil had half canola oil, half fish oil to balance it out perfectly. And that you had to leave the oil out, otherwise it wasn't vegan.
Mm.
But they did have that option where you could order it without that.
This coffee one tastes like chocolate coffee.
Yes, it's really good.
Yeah. This is pretty much my breakfast every day.
I can totally see that. Like that's...
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you're not drinking enough of it to get like the full sensation, but you get after about, I don't know, there's about a fourth of a bottle left, I start feeling really full.
Hmm.
So
it's definitely better than any Starbucks coffee you could pick up on your way to work. So,
and no line.
and that after that milky after thing, which bugs Kat, but not because I am a human and I do drink milk. I'm a mammal after all.
Yeah, you're supposed to stop that after you're like an infant child.
I don't drink human milk. I drink animal milk, like a normal person. Klingons can make fun of me all they want. I don't care.
Well, okay, so Soylent 2.0, it's in bottles now. You can buy it in bottles. You have to mix it yourself. Can you buy it on Amazon?
No, you can only buy it on Soylent.com.
Okay.
They only sell it direct, unfortunately.
Soylent.com. Maybe someday you can buy Soylent through Amazon and can give Nerdy Show money as you do it.
You can buy the chocolate that you're going to put in the Soylent. That's for sure. I highly recommend that.
But one pressing question. So this is Soylent 2.0. Do they make incremental changes, like switch yeah. out and make it 2.1 and 2.2?
Yeah, actually, when they started out with Soylent 1.0, they started changing the formula based on feedback that they got from the community. So a lot of the complaints were like, oh, this gives me too much gas, or like I'm feeling weird, stuff like that. And they'll try to figure out what is exactly causing that, and they'll switch ingredients out. I think in 1.0 they weren't able to get enough quantity of the rice protein that they wanted. So I think there was a couple changes in there where it was just a logistics thing, but yeah, for the most part, they change it based on feedback and how people are feeling and the test studies that they're doing also.
That's and awesome. Is this the what's the size of these bottles?
I don't know. They don't have any like ounce rating on it, but this bottle is 400 kilocalories. So like 400 calories.
And that's like one day's worth, or is that like
no, this is
a meal's worth?
1/5 of what you're supposed to have for a full day if you were doing a replacement.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
But as with the Soylent powder, one bag was supposed to be one day's worth, but I was able to stretch it out to be 2 days. It depends on your body chemistry, how much food you actually eat. Some people eat a lot more than others to be able to keep going. So personally, I only drink about 2 to 2.5 bottles of this per day,
but they recommend
as
like,
a
like,
two-thirds replacement.
But like nutrient-wise, they say 5 is like the full day's worth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think this is something that astronauts will one day take into space or maybe to Mars?
That's a good question.
It easily could be. And they'd have to probably suck it out of little packets or something. But, yeah.
They could suck it out of edible packets, actually.
They could probably.
Because there's another weird development in future food and future food packaging. Recently, a company has debuted an edible water bottle.
Yep. I wouldn't so much call it a bottle, though. It's like it's an edible
sphere
sack of water, I guess.
It's like a pod.
Yeah. But it's made out of it's like a gelatinous material. So it's calcium chloride, brown algae, and it's like these layers of membrane that keeps the water in. So you bite into it and then you suck the water out and then you can eat the packet.
What is this goo?
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, brown algae is always something that sounds kind of gross, but it's being used in everything now.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a chocolate company called like Innocent Chocolate that is like a chocolate. It's not bad for you. It's not a dessert because they've made something with brown algae or whatever. So brown algae is in everything these days. The bottle is clear is what I'm getting at. It's not a brown,
weird
algae bottle.
Kind of looks like a silicone implant.
Yes, it does.
It does, yeah. Actually, well, the size is probably more like actually a testicular replacement.
Well, I'm trying to picture in my mind's eye. And I'm like, well, it's clear, but it's got like liquid in it, but it's tangible. You can touch it, and it's kind of jiggly. It's like, all right, that sounds kind of...
Now, is the idea behind this to reduce packaging? Is that...
Yeah, yeah. And then also...
Where are you getting these from, then? Are you going to get them off of a pile?
Because I imagine if you get them out of a vending machine, by the time it hits the bottom, it would just splat.
Well, I also thought, like, how do you carry it with you, right? Like, you put it in your backpack and that doesn't burst, like, during the day-to-day jostling.
How many people are touching this little orb before it goes in your mouth? Yeah, that's my main concern. Well,
the other thing is, what you have to remember is, the point is you can eat it, not that you should eat it. Like, you can, it's not going to harm you. It's not going to be particularly good for you, but it's not going to be bad for you either.
Still, you have to put your mouth on it to drink out of it, right?
That's true.
What you currently, basically, they've made these that you kind of like bite into it and suck it out, and you're left with this weird little water condom, this drippy weird little condom. But this is just it's just a proof of concept right now.
Well, you know what? Even if you don't eat it, that means it could break down in the environment easier.
Right?
Still
the
compostable.
Yeah. So that's
ridiculously biodegradable. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, you know, some places have those plastic cups that are made out of corn or whatever, and they're clear and they look like plastic, but they're supposed to be compostable. Well, I tried composting them, and that did not. Man, it was like over a year before I was like, whatever, I'm just going to throw this out. Like, there's garbage in my dirt right now, and it just looks like I buried garbage.
See, like, even if I get a can of soda out of a vending machine, I'm still usually rinsing the top off because I don't trust where it's been. Like, I don't want to put that to my mouth. Why am I going to want to put these orbs to my mouth?
Well, you could still rinse them off, right?
I guess.
They don't dissolve because otherwise they dissolve from the inside.
I mean, it's not like Zephyr Hills made these and they're trying to push it on the public. But if this is a proof of concept, it's like, okay, but what is the real world use of it other than just? It's like, okay, yeah, well, you can throw it away. It's all right, great, but where do I buy it?
So there's actually a video online that shows you how you can make your own water orb to carry with you.
It's a like gastro thing that people do. Spherification. It's like a hip thing to turn stuff into weird blobs.
A water pod.
John, our other SciTech correspondent, he was trying to do spherification for macaroni and cheese and succeeded at one point, I believe. It's something you can do, but this process, I don't know. Maybe you were saying, well, how are you gonna get it? Maybe it'll be stacked like apples in a grocery store. I don't know.
What's the tensile strength? Like what?
I don't know. Like, is it a water bottle or a water balloon? You can have a fight with them; they'll explode. We haven't seen that video yet, but we will someday. Probably.
I'm curious, but I don't know what like it's. You know what? Good that you made it, but I don't know what the purpose is yet.
Yeah, because I feel like you're still gonna have to contain it somehow.
Yeah.
Like to sell it.
Yeah.
And if you're containing it anyway,
well, to ship it even. Like if you're gonna bring it somewhere.
Yeah.
Like if you go to the soccer game and the soccer mom is like, oh, it's Mrs. Smith. She's bringing all the
water orbs,
the Sunny Delight, or she's bringing all of the Capri Suns today. And then she opens up, it's the water orbs, and it's just like, what?
Oh,
wait, I don't want to touch that.
Right.
That's in your cooler.
Like, by the way, it has a really stupid name.
Oh yes, it is the Uhu.
Oh God.
Yeah. Can we just reject this concept?
I brought Uhus.
Well, that's how you get the kids. It's a fun name. Like Ooh-hoo. Like Yoo-hoo. Everyone loved Yoo-hoo, so.
But this Ooh-hoo. Is water. This isn't Yoo-hoo.
This tastes like everybody who's touched it.
Yeah.
We just want to get really used to having balls close to your mouth.
I just picture a clear orb of like liquid, like water, but just fingerprints on it, like Dorito fingerprints,
yeah,
or Cheeto fingerprints.
Exactly.
And I'm not.
That's why I don't want to. I'm not down with this idea at all.
But you're not supposed to eat the container necessarily. That's the thing. Like, so
you still have to put your mouth on it.
Presently, we don't know what form it's going to take.
I guess you could poke a straw in.
Like,
it?
Even if you did that,
you probably
though,
could.
I was about to say that, but you'd still get like
a little bung
of it into your mouth.
Maybe there'll be, I don't know, some kind of a nipple thing.
Am I going to have to use water to wash it before I bite it, defeating the whole purpose of, like...
Yeah, portable water.
It's interesting tech, though. We'll link to where you can watch the video of
Rip open one of the other ones onto the pile to wash them off.
Or maybe just keep using your, you know, clean canteens or that.
Yeah. Yeah. But a weird thing that someday you could see somewhere
like, it's
out
interesting.
In the wild.
It is interesting, but yeah. I ain't going to put my mouth on it. That's all I'm saying. Brown algae does not touch this lip. Like,
so we've talked about the future of drinking water, but also there's the future of shaving. So you guys all hate shaving your legs, right? I mean, I'm not the only one.
I hate it so much that I never even do it.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, I do because it's like it's.
It's tough enough to shave my face.
Man, mm-hmm. I got to do like two passes of Nair and it's awful. I hate it.
You get the ingrown hairs.
Yeah. Just,
anyway, there's a company, Skarp, which is Swedish for sharp. Fun fact.
Skarp.
Skarp.
Yeah,
Skarp,
to get
Skarp.
The shaving. Get the Skarp,
the
shaving.
With the lasers.
Like, I was thinking more Swedish chef. Nah, you can't the like the piece of lettuce. Like you can't use that knife. You got to get something sharp.
Oh, Skarp.
Yeah, Skarp. Yeah.
Bork, bork, bork.
Now what are you doing? Stop it!
That would have been a way better Kickstarter video than the one that they currently have.
Yes.
Opening with, we've been shaving the same way for 5,000 years, everyone. And
I haven't.
Yeah. Well, according to them, we have. And they
used three razors.
Yeah.
They only had one.
Or shells, you know. And the pink shells were for the girls' razors. Anyway, they've come up with a razor that is a laser. So now you can laser the hair off of your face or legs.
Or wherever.
Or wherever.
That pesky bikini line.
Off your household pet.
So is it a handheld thing, or is it something that I stick my face in and it scans my face?
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that would be...
Put your face in this receptacle and push the button.
No, it's totally a handheld thing. It looks like a disposable razor. I guess the way that it works is there's a chromophore in your hair. So that's essentially, it's a molecule that makes color appear depending on whether the light's absorbed or reflected. And the problem that they had before was that you can detect dark hair pretty easily, but you couldn't detect light hair with a laser. And so now this laser can target just hair in general. And so it just only cuts through your hair to the skin is the theory
of
operation.
Wait. So you're saying that this thing like scans your skin and only attacks hair?
It's a frequency attuned specifically to the destruction of hair.
Right.
Huh.
It's a specific wavelength.
Weak enough to not hurt my skin.
Not at all.
Right. Yeah.
But strong enough really to just get rid of the hair.
Yes.
Right.
Can you add enough power to this supposed laser to turn it into a weapon?
Not a chance. There's no way. It's too small. The razor's quite dainty. It is the same size as a common razor. So.
But if there's enough, I'm just saying, it's like a laser that's an inch long. Can you turn it into a lightsaber is what I'm getting at. Can you just swing it at somebody and just take out a chunk of their skin?
I do know that if you take apart a Blu-ray player, you can put enough power to those diodes.
To pop a balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I mean, you can go buy like pocket lasers that, you know, they can burn wood, blind you. Freak out airplanes, you know, the whole nine yards. That's easy. They're probably on ThinkGeek. I don't know.
I actually saw a homemade. Someone took a Blu-ray laser and put it into a handheld old Star Trek phaser.
Yeah,
and pop balloons with that. We may have seen the same.
That's
thing.
What I was talking. Yeah, that's what I was talking
thing
about.
Thing is awesome. Sound effects and everything. Just poof, and it has the blue light, just like on the. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah. So the video demoing it is actually sort of lame. It takes like three tries, and it doesn't even like cut the hair down to the skin. But I guess it's
where do
to
I
be,
sign? Oh, right. I'm gonna order one right now.
You can get one.
No, see, they need three lasers on it. That's the secret.
Or five.
Yeah. So if you currently back it, you can get it for the low price of $159. But once those are gone, it's going to go to $189, and then it's going to go to $299.
Still
and
cheaper than buying razors.
Then it's
going
to go to $449. So
wait,
what?
$449.
They have these stacked, very limited early bird stocks. So we don't know how they're going to be, but. The idea is that you'd pay a lot of money for one razor that you could use forever.
But right. Not forever. So it's actually, it's only...
Not forever. Okay, there
no,
we go.
Not forever.
That's
yeah.
The deal is getting better.
It has a life of 5,000 hours.
And then you throw it away?
And yeah.
But their whole platform was to reduce the waste of razors.
I guess...
Ugh, guys.
Only, so, I mean,
well,
5,000 hours...
Well, no, that does reduce the waste.
A little bit.
Yeah. Because, like, think of how often you're throwing away a razor and how often you have to buy more.
But, I mean, is it worse for the environment to throw away the electronics that are inside of this laser razor than regular razors?
There's no... Now, wait, are they saying that you have to throw it away because the laser itself is bad or that you have to recharge it like the energy is gone?
No, the laser itself, the light only lasts for 5,000 hours.
I'm looking at this little animated picture that they have on here, and there's like seven hairs that it's going across, and it's like, oh, the laser turns on to cut out this one hair. But I don't know about your skin, but my hair is a little bit more dense than this.
Yeah, no, it's what they've shown demo-wise is really problematic. I asked John about it, and he was saying that they've got some kind of thing where they can't show the equation or anything because or even the actual laser that they intend to use because they're worried about someone stealing it before they're able to debut the product.
Which is a legitimate concern.
Yeah. I mean, and it is a for real guy that's behind it. So the guy that founded it invented the intense pulsed light, which is what's used in the laser hair removal places. So he does know what he's doing, presumably.
But it's as far as like this platform for kickstarting it and all that, it's flimsy at best because of what they can't show. Because apparently that's not even a demo of the actual laser. It's a demo of what could be the thing, but is a weaker version of what you're actually getting. But they can't show what you're actually getting because reasons. So it's a whole weird thing. The premise, I think, but what we should take away from this long term is the technology is hypothetically there. It needs to improve a great deal, but we could be shaving with lasers sometime within our lifetimes.
And once again, the most accurate depiction of the future may be The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It makes me wish I'd seen all that movie, but I fell asleep during it.
The self-driving car.
Yeah, there's self-driving cars in that movie.
Was treated very realistically.
Yeah, that was about the closest to real that I can think of in any movie.
I mean, XFL is still doing really well, obviously. The Extreme Football League, that was featured in that film. They're still around, right?
Actually, they are in minor things. They're not, but they're not a league anymore. It's like a fan spinoff.
I do remember there's a female antagonist who could change her nails and her hair color like at will. That was amazing. I want that.
Well, there's the technology of like that was. Well, actually, no,
that was Total Recall.
That was Total Recall. Yeah, correction. Thank you. But the shaving with a laser was indeed mentioned in that film.
Although I have to make a correction. It's good for 50,000 hours, not 5,000. So it's a little better,
I guess. I think we need to explore this technology that I was talking about where you put your face in a box and it just scans and better. Just zaps everything.
So, but then you got to make the leg box. You got to make the crotch box.
Yeah.
Got to make the arm box.
Pre-order now at crotchbox.com.
The butt box.
Yeah, crotch box. That's a highly marketable product.
Crotchbox.org.
All right, well, Back to the Future is going to have its 30th anniversary. And on October 21st, which is the time when Marty goes into 2015.
Yeah.
For real this time. Not just an internet.
Yeah, for reals.
Yeah.
A lot of theaters around the country are going to be showing the marathon of all three movies back to back.
Which is amazing.
Which I'm probably going to try to go see. It's long, but how often am I going to see Back to the Future 2 or 3 on the big screen?
Right, yeah, good point.
But they're also releasing the comic book.
Official canonical continuation,
right.
Published by IDW, written by Bob Gale, with mm-hmm. Eric Burnham and Dan Schoening from our beloved Ghostbusters series.
Exactly, yeah. And they're going to talk about how Doc and Marty met and all these other side adventures that went on, which I'm really excited for. They're
re-releasing the much maligned Telltale video game because
yes.
It didn't play too well. But I guess they may have changed it around a little bit, but they did change it by adding in
Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson, yes.
The voice of Biff. So yeah. Tom Wilson, Biff will be playing Biff in the video game, which is going to be really cool because he was kind of missed. But
I guess he was unavailable.
I did unfortunately try to play that game. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, the first episode
it actually turned
rough.
Me off of Telltale games in general.
See,
which is too bad because after that,
yeah.
There was a whole new world.
Back to the first episode was pretty rough, but it got much better. Like for each consecutive episode as it went along, got way better. So by the time you got to the end, I'm like, this feels like straight up like a movie. Like I don't know, they really hit their stride and then got better towards the end, which is why I guess Walking Dead really got good. But Jurassic Park is actually what turned me off of Telltale because that one was actually anyway,
that was a true disaster.
That was a true disaster. But all that aside, what else was there? Lost my train of thought now.
Well, Secret Cinema.
Yes, yes.
We mentioned,
early. That was one of the top nerdy things of last year.
Yeah, I got to check it out. It was Secret Cinema is a company that puts on these live interactive film screenings that usually involve much more than a film screening. And in this case, they built a third scale replica of Hill Valley in London. And it was completely interactive. There were tons of actors. Everybody's in character. You were in the 1950s. You had a place in Hill Valley. We'll link to on this episode's page where there's the episode where I actually talk about it in full. And it was amazing. They've been saying they wanted to take it to the U.S. and it was going to happen this year. We didn't hear anything about it until this interview with Bob Gale.
Yeah. And what he said in spring of 2016, they're going to be doing it in L.A.
Yes.
That's the current rumor. And they said they also said that if it was successful enough, they would take it on tour throughout the United States.
Which is insane.
That is insane, but I'm still hopeful. Like, I want to see it.
Do they have any idea where it's going to be?
It's going to be somewhere in California, possibly Long Beach. We don't have details yet.
The best thing would be to do it on the Universal backlot where the clock tower is.
That is true.
You're literally on the set. Like, that's literally the courthouse square with the actual stores there. So instead of building it at like a two-thirds scale, just do it full scale in Hill Valley.
So how does it work? So like you said, like you go and you have a house there. Like, is it a weekend jaunt that you take to Hill Valley?
You don't have a house. It's like
when you get a ticket, they assign you a person. You are each individual person who's there of the 2,000 or so people who attend on a given night because it's like a 4-hour, 5-hour experience. Okay. You go there. You are that person. You're encouraged to dress in 1950s clothing, and you walk in the rural Hill Valley around the Twin Pines Farm and go up through the suburbs. There's all these different houses. You can go in the houses. You can talk on the phones. And they're approximations of houses. They're not real. They're like one-room concepts of houses, but you can walk into them. You can flip through their phone books. You can call the phone numbers, talk to like people on the phones, interact with weird people, play all these games, get a hamburger and a milkshake at the diner.
You get your haircut too, right? Like at the barbershop or something?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Wow. You can go and you can watch that Ronald Reagan film.
Cattle Queen of Montana.
Cattle Queen of Montana. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's a really fully interactive experience. And during that time, there are also actors portraying Doc, Marty, Goldie Wilson, Lorraine, George, the whole nine yards, with the film unfolding around you until finally the film plays projected on the clock tower, and the film still unfolds around you as you're sitting on the grass. Then a DeLorean comes out. There's a whole chase sequence. The Libyan chase sequence happens on the road surrounding the green of the clock tower, and it's amazing. Pyrotechnics the works.
And you can just decide to follow Marty, or you can decide to just follow Biff, and so you can see the movie unfold. Like, the movie will happen, but it's like, what was Biff doing while Marty was out doing this? You can follow Biff and see what he was doing.
Yeah, stuff that wasn't in the movie. Yeah.
Sounds like we'll need a Nerdy Show field trip.
Yes.
Yeah, I would recommend, if you can go, you should go. I should also add that Secret Cinema this year did a Empire Strikes Back thing in London, and we have some pals who are over there, and in our next episode of State of the Empire, we're going to be talking to them about what the Empire Strikes Back experience was this year. So keep an eye peeled. Secret Cinema, they're becoming very, very noteworthy, and now that they're going to lay claim on America as well.
Because they've already covered some of my favorite movies. I mean, besides Back to the Future, they did Miller's Crossing. They did Blade Runner. I think they did the Blues Brothers. It's like it's pretty crazy.
They did Ghostbusters.
Yeah, of course they did Ghostbusters. There are several places that did Ghostbusters, but they did it too.
Shawshank Redemption. Well. Shawshank Redemption was crazy. Yeah.
Alien, Prometheus.
How long have they been around?
At least 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're good at being secret.
Do all of their things get that detailed? Like Cap was talking about? Because I can't imagine going into too much detail with Blues Brothers.
No. The Back to the Future one is sort of like their biggest one by far. But for like Blade Runner, they rented out like a warehouse, and they had like they would stack
shipping crates,
and so the shipping crates would like form a maze up to the main warehouse. And when you walk between the shipping crates, they would have all the overhanging like debris that made you feel like you're walking through futuristic Chinatown. And they had people selling their wares, and they had little people running around in costume, and dressed in all the weird like toy stuff, and just really getting you in that mood of you're walking through future LA. And they had like sprayed in water like it was raining, and keeping it dark neon everywhere. Then you get into the warehouse, and it was all just very large fans creating shadows, you know, like it's just really getting the thing going. And then the screen was projected so big, and when they had people reenacting the movie, like when Roy was making his big jump and he's picking up Deckard from hanging over the cliff, he was actually hanging in front of the screen, and they had him lift him up and pull them up on top. So they're standing on top of the movie screen is where the building is supposed to be.
I would involuntarily weep. There would just be tears streaming down my face. Yeah. Tears in rain, of course.
Tears in the rain.
But anyway, once these guys really lay their claim on America, we're going to see some serious shit. So look forward to it, and we'll keep you posted because it's amazing. It was top tier, top nerdy things of 2014. So, you know, it could be again.
We don't give that away lightly.
No, we do not. So, yeah, in summation, big year for Back to the Future and more to come because it's not over in 2015. 2016 keeps on coming.
And I want these memes to end. Today is the day Marty went into the future. It's been happening since 2012.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous.
Do you think maybe we'll see, like, an old newspaper published in the, you know, 18 whenever?
Actually, speaking of newspaper, Bob Gale said that he said, wait till October 21st, 2015 and pick up a copy of USA Today for a surprise.
Shut up.
Nice.
Shut the fuck up.
If they got a front page cover.
Oh, my God.
It could.
Oh, my God.
That would be the best.
Oh, my fucking God. Oh, man.
I hope it's not just like, it's like, this looks completely normal. Turn the page and it's just a full spread, like, ad for pick up the Blu-ray. And I'm like, damn it, Bob. I trusted you. but they're also releasing Blu-ray, obviously, Blu-ray box set with a complete release of the cartoon series that was on TV.
Yeah, no, that's, and with the Bill Nye segments.
With the Bill Nye and Christopher Lloyd segments reinstated into it. So
first time it's ever been collected, I believe.
Yes, in its entirety, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you can pre-order that now.
On Nerdy Show.
Yeah, if you're not familiar, we are Amazon affiliates, so if you go to nerdyshow.com/Amazon, anything you buy can give back to the show.
Also, the Ultimate Visual Guide to Back to the Future, which is a new huge book that has all the designs of like hoverboards, all the different pre-concepts for the DeLorean, behind-the-scenes photos that have never been seen before. It's pretty awesome. I'm definitely picking one up.
Well, we'll link to where you can get both those things on this episode's page specifically. Well, in unrelated movie news, man, I got a story. It's just a mess. This is the Hollywood equivalent of relationship gossip in high school. Who's dating who? And like all the convoluted, zigzaggy ins and outs. If you were trying to diagram,
we
this
all
thing.
Love that. So go ahead, Kat.
I know. But this pertains to all of us because it pertains to Pacific Rim, and as we all know, that's one of the best movies of the last 10 years. So it's very important to us that it gets a worthwhile sequel, directed by Guillermo del Toro. Unfortunately, the studios, they consider Pacific Rim to be a problem property. In the end, it made enough money. It made a lot of money, especially in China, actually. Probably because the Chinese had a kick-ass robot in that movie. But the thing is, it's still not enough that they feel like a follow-up is worth the risk necessarily. We know there's a sequel in development right now. However, something really convoluted and weird has happened that has jeopardized the production of Pacific Rim 2, which is tentatively titled Pacific Rim Maelstrom. That is, it relates to King Kong, Godzilla, and Jurassic World. All these things are related.
Because we want sequels to all of those movies.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, here's something I didn't know. Universal does not own King Kong.
What? Oh, is it Legendary owns it?
No. No one does.
What?
King Kong, he's public domain now.
Ooh. Oh, no.
So Universal, they were bankrolling Legendary's King Kong film, Skull Island. Kong is, I believe, what it's called. And they actually have a theme park attraction called Skull Island Reign of Kong.
Yeah, which is opening right next to Jurassic Park.
Yeah, they're building an island for it. It's coming out summer 2016.
Wait, in this Universal? So they took Isles out Adventure. The King... Oh, so they took out the King Kong ride
right,
to replace
years ago.
It with the mummy.
Which is
and
a good
now
ride.
They're rebuilding it again.
Right.
Well, it's not the same ride. It's different. It's a new ride. It's different. You're on Skull Island. So okay. It's not just Kong. It's like dinosaurs and bugs.
And if all their concept work is to be believed, it's actually going to be a pretty amazing ride doing some crazy shit that's both like a buggy ride, like a safari buggy ride that's also like in big sets with all kinds of animatronics and projections and CGI
it
stuff.
It seemed to me like they were taking the concept of the dinosaur ride in Animal Kingdom where your buggy is like on all four wheels are on the ground completely flat on a smooth surface, but the buggy is moving up and down.
Okay.
Take that, but with the technology of some of the Harry Potter rides where they put a dome around you, so they're projecting screens 360 all around you of the creatures attacking you and everything else.
So is that replacing the current?
It's actually not replacing anything, which is great.
It's a new area that they're just sort of squeezing it in between these buildings.
They're building a new island into Islands of Adventure. Tiny one right next to Jurassic Park.
Only for one ride.
Right.
So it's a little island the size of one ride, which makes sense because Skull Island's not that big.
They're doing this, though. Universal's doing this. Universal's adding this thing called Skull Island Reign of Kong in the park. They were going to be releasing Skull Island Kong, the film, and now they're not. Now they're like, Warner Brothers, you can have it. And here's why. Legendary Pictures, you're probably familiar with them. They've got their name on lots of different films. That's because this guy, Thomas Tull, who runs it, he finances a lot of movies. He's a really cool dude. He's kind of an eccentric, so I like that about him. He just loves cool shit. Everybody I've ever talked to who knows him or has worked with him, it's like, this guy, he's so energetic. He has a ton of money. He loves cool shit. He'll bankroll stuff that's awesome. He's why we have Pacific Rim. In general, there's a couple clunkers in there, but he's kind of why we have some nice things. However, the studio system is a bit, it's interesting.
Outdated.
Yes, it is. They need his money. There was a time where Universal, they didn't have much in the way of big shot financiers funding their films. So they were happily taking this dude's money. But then like, oh, Thomas Tull, you're taking too much credit for what you're doing. We're taking your money, but we don't like that you're taking so much credit for, say, the Christopher Nolan Batman films. Or, in this case, Jurassic World. You took too much credit for that. We took your money, but you took too much credit for that. So we're mad at you.
I'm sorry, you lose that right, though. I mean, if he's the reason that the whole fucking movie got made, like, then he can take as much credit as he wants because his dollars went into it.
Yeah,
if you don't want his money, don't take his money.
Now, I might be summarizing wrongly, so if I am, let me know. But this is basically the information that I've interpreted. So Universal, they weren't doing so great, but they had a great year. Last year,
yes.
This year, Jurassic World made tons of money. So now they're like, you know what, Tull, we don't want you to throw your weight around anymore. He had the deal to get King Kong there. He was like, you can have Kong, but I want you to distribute two films that aren't probably going to do very well, and they were Michael Mann's film Black Hat and also the fantasy film Seventh Son. So those went out. Universal didn't lose much money, but they did put their name on it. They did spend time promoting it. Now they're like, look, we don't need your money anymore. We're done with you. So go back to Warner Brothers, where you already burned some bridges because of them not liking the credit you were taking for the Batman films. But there's another thing. There's another reason they were mad with him, guys. There's another reason they were mad with this guy, because he was putting King Kong in the world of the Godzilla reboot, even though Godzilla is a Warner Brothers film and King Kong was a Universal film. And they were like, dude, you can't do that. Dude, you cannot reference the Monarch organization in this. We cannot have these films cross over. We're different companies. What don't you understand about that? And he's like, I'm doing it. So he did it. And they're like, fuck you, get over to Warner Brothers.
Wow. Huh.
So
Marvel does it.
So now King Kong, not a very problematic film as well. Like, it's like Michael Keaton was on it. He left the project. Yeah. It's being directed by a dude who has only one major film to his name, which I say major, but it was an indie film. It was called The Kings of Summer. His name's Jordan Vogt Roberts. And so relative unknown, young guy, kind of similar situation to Jurassic World.
Yeah.
It's written by the guy who wrote Godzilla and the guy who wrote Real Steel. And the guy who wrote Safety Not Guaranteed and Jurassic World, and is also one of the dudes who's working on the current reboot of Flight of the Navigator, which...
Wait, whoa.
What?
Yes.
There's going to be a reboot of that?
What's funny about this, when I saw this in on Wikipedia, was in 2009, in one of the first Nerdy Show episodes we ever recorded, we talked about the publicized reboot of Flight of the Navigator. If I was reading this correctly, if the information I saw was correct, he's actually rewriting the script from that attempted 2009 reboot that we reported on all those years ago.
Not only that, on one of the first State of the Empires, when the early rumor was that they were looking at Colin Trevorrow to direct episode 7, and he was like, I can either confirm or deny what I'm working on. And then the rumors kept swirling around that he was attached because other people close to him said, well, we can't tell you what he's working on, but he's working on something that would be really close to your childhood. That ended up being true for Jurassic World. Before it was announced that he was doing Jurassic World, but after it was announced that J.J. Abrams was doing Star Wars, it was like, well, what is that childhood thing he's working on? The rumors were big time suggesting that Colin Trevorrow was going to direct Flight of the Navigator.
Which may still be true.
Exactly.
Whoever said
Trevorrow is doing Jurassic World, Flight of the Navigator, Star Wars, like literally everything. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Whoever said that life is just like high school all over again is really, really correct.
So that film's had some trouble. It may be fine. I don't know. But now it's at Warner Brothers. And now Warner Brothers is like, dude, this is great. Godzilla and King Kong. Okay, let's do it. They're going to explain. It doesn't even matter that King Kong is so tiny, big, but tiny, that him climbing the Empire State Building is a big deal, while Godzilla is huge.
Godzilla will accidentally brush up against the Empire State Building.
And like, knock it over.
Yeah.
They're like, don't worry, guys. We're confident we can come up with a rationale to explain how King Kong and Godzilla can not only do battle, but possibly become allies. So they're like,
he's gonna get bitten by something and get infected. He's gonna grow to the size of Godzilla. That's the only I can imagine. Three film deal, guys.
God. Oh my God.
I don't know how I feel about that at all.
Well, you're gonna feel worse because of this three film deal where we have the crossover between King Kong and Godzilla that we're pretty sure it seems like dubious whether it's a good idea.
More likely now than ever, though. It seems more likely than more than ever
that. Because of this deal, because of this money being circulated around, because of Warner Brothers being more interested in this than the uncertain project of Pacific Rim 2, Pacific Rim 2 may have been shelved. However, Guillermo del Toro said, hey, no, I understand. Look, this thing's probably going to get delayed. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not gone. They're still in pre-production. They're still finalizing the script. And within the month, they'll be submitting a budget. So it's still being worked on, but it is probably going to get delayed, and he may have to do another film before he does Pacific Rim 2. Maybe it's not dead. Maybe it is. It's hard to say.
I was more excited about the prospect of Godzilla being in Pacific Rim than King Kong being in Godzilla.
Well, and you're not alone in that. In fact, on Nerdy Show Lounge, the exclusive hangout for Nerdy Show Patreon backers at $10 and more, if you want to hang out with the host of Nerdy Show and all other Nerdy Show fans and contribute comments to this very series, well, David Van Pelt, he said, picture it. Godzilla pups up and completely wipes out one of the smaller islands off Japan. The military is completely outmatched and resorts to tracking the monster. She continues surfacing and destroying, clearly working towards the mainland of Tokyo. The military is flipping out when an old Hollywood film exec shows up with an old film canister. He shows them footage from Skull Island taken in the 30s and says it might be their best hope. The military goes to Skull Island, captures King Kong or Son of Kong or
Kong's dead.
Whatever.
He said he's fan fiction.
King Kong. He said King Kong or the Son of Kong. Van Pelt's got his base's corner. Don't worry about
all
it.
All right.
And so they get him and bring him back. 30 minutes of monster fight ends with a dead Kong and Godzilla retreating back into the ocean, but she's tracked all the way back to the rift, and the last signal received is a sign that another kaiju is coming. Oh shit, says the world. We end on the unveiling of the blueprints for the first Jaeger. And that's David Van Pelt's plan on how to tie all this together.
I'd say it, I don't know. I feel like given the last Godzilla movie, Godzilla would be like, if Pacific Rim, like Jaegers were getting in trouble, then Godzilla might show up and finish off the kaiju or something, you know?
Yeah, because, you know,
like, that seems like it would be more in line that Godzilla would be anti-kaiju.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, because
they're an invading force.
Yeah, if Godzilla is like the keeping the balance of nature, yeah, would it be his job to eat the kaiju?
It would be.
It would be, yeah.
He wouldn't probably help the Jaegers directly. He might even fight the Jaegers if they get in the way just because they're weird too. But,
and it's hard enough to get regular size King Kong off of Skull Island. How do you get kaiju size King Kong off of Skull Island?
You have a bunch of bananas and you put it on a helicopter and he just swims. Like,
no,
and
you build a really
it.
Big barrel. And he's going to climb in and you
fire bananas.
The moon.
Yeah.
There would have to be dinosaurs on that island though to sustain him. You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
What is he
yeah.
eating? If he's that big.
Well, I mean, isn't that the point of Skull Island? Aren't there dinosaurs on Skull Island? I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
There are Peter Jacksons.
But apes, I mean, apes are omnivores, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But don't most gorillas, like, live off of the vegetation?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So King Kong eats that, you know? Like, he eats...
giant bananas.
And insects. He could eat, like, those giant bugs. Like grubs. They're giant grubs.
They're to have
slimy but satisfying.
Kaiju size though, like
no. I'm talking regular Kong. That's what I'm saying. The plot hole is when you have kaiju size Kong.
Okay,
it's kaiju Kong.
Yeah, because
that's terrible.
Yeah,
it's terrible, but that's what it is.
So this is what we're dealing with. This is why Pacific Rim 2 may or may not happen. It's not over yet, but we got to let them fight. So we'll see what happens. Fight. And this, I feel, is a great example for why the studio system is falling to pieces. They're relying on the money of a dude who just wants to do cool films, and yet have their own weird little infighting.
For them to say no to that much money, there has to be something else going on.
I would, maybe so, but I don't know, it's weird. Universal wouldn't help finance Crimson Peak, the new Guillermo del Toro film that comes out on October 16th, the really cool-looking horror film, looks amazing. They're like, yo, this is a rated R film. It has to be PG-13 or you're not getting any of our money.
That's, I really hate that.
Yeah, I hate it too. They're sacrificing the quality and the longevity of properties because they want to get more butts in seats in a theater system that, I love movie theaters, but the whole thing is fucked. I mean, if you start charging $5 for seats again, maybe you're going to see people come back. But right now, you're out of your fucking mind. $20 a ticket is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. So I personally get turned off if something is like PG-13 that looks like it probably shouldn't be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, right. Well, they're going to be censoring themselves and doing, you know, good stupid like cutaways and...
Yeah. Like, so many films get, like, watered down and ruined because of that bullshit. So, it's a mistake. And all the great classic films, I mean, what would Alien be if it was PG-13? What would it be?
Garbage.
Garbage, yes. It would be bullshit.
Jaws was PG.
PG meant something different back then.
That is true.
Jaws would have been PG-13, possibly even R.
I think Jaws is R now.
Like, Back to the Future was PG. Back to the Future would have been PG-13 if it came out today.
Oh, most definitely.
It's different. It's a different world. The rating system is bullshit. The studios are bullshit. Yeah, we'll see what happens. It's going to change. Within our lifetimes, it's going to change, whatever it is.
And on that note, we're all sad.
And on that note, fuck the movie industry.
Yeah. Fuck the man. Keeping down cool movies.
This guy has so much money. Why doesn't he just start his own studio? Like, why doesn't he just do whatever the fuck he wants?
Why doesn't he start like a...
cool guy studio.
Or like a Kickstarter for movies. Like,
I think we need to stop
pre-order this movie
and get this off of the record that we should just approach him with our idea for a movie studio and then he'll just fund us.
We should.
He's a cool dude.
He's a cool dude.
We're cool dudes. We're cool dudettes.
Yeah. Yeah, we're cool. We're super cool. So we should hang out with Thomas Tull. Yeah, so
that was a good transition.
That was good. Yeah,
we'll just leave that in.
We should no really.
I want that as a ringtone. 3 a.m. hear that ringtone.
3 a.m. rolls around.
I'll buy it. Sure.
Really? How much would you buy that for?
A dollar.
It is going up on the store for a dollar. No freebies for you either. You said you would buy it for a dollar. I'm holding you to that.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Or we could make it available to patrons a dollar and more.
Yeah, have it be exclusive Patreon content.
Yeah, the I'd buy that for a dollar special.
I'll show them what we think of it. Here, this is worth a dollar.
Maybe it can be a ploy to get people to give us more dollars. To be like, do you want this awesome ringtone? This content and more coming out.
That's only for the high-level producers get the ringtone.
And they're paying all that money, and all they get is us going, ring, 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 ring. Ringtone, pick up the phone. Pick it up. This is Boar with Nerdy Show, and I have to say to you, pick up your fucking phone. Just shit like that.
People make a lot of money doing shit like that. It's like the stupid ringtones. I won't go into it. It's like, derail us even further.
Well, if they do make stupid money doing that, then we should be stupid and do that.
Yeah, but then we'd be stupid.
But we'd be stupid with money.
We can get
stupid
a money
with
bin.
Money doesn't make you cool.
It's what you do with that money that makes you cool.
Like Tom Tull.
Yeah.
Yep.
You start out stupid with
way.
Money.
Buy Your Way to Coolness.
Yeah. Pacific Rim 2.
Buy Your Way to Coolness.
Yeah.
I'd get that book.
Yo.
Done. Writing it.
I'll write it right now.
I'm actually selling the ebook on buyyourwaytocoolness.com.
It's a 5-step process. One,
buy the book. Yeah.
Step number one, buy this $15 ebook.
Buy the book, backwards baseball cap, fanny pack, rollerblades, sunglasses. That's how you're cool.
Now, you don't have to give away the entire contents of my ebook.
Oh.
Now they don't have to spend the $15.
Yeah, now they don't have to spend the $15.
You ruined everything.
They're not going to know where to put those.
But,
they need to buy
them.
But
there's really pretty pictures to go along with each of those things you
those
listed.
Those instructional illustrations that let you know what to do with them, because you might not know. I'm not going to say it.
Does the hat go on your head? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, where does the fanny pack go?
And there's color choices. On your fanny? I mean, so what colors do you choose? Or is that just
that's a supplemental
plus in England,
pamphlet?
In England, fanny pack means
different
something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, where do you put it?
Spend $15 and you can find out.
If that domain's available, I should do that, and we should leave it in.
Well, which domain?
Buy Your Way to Cool.
Oh, I was like, as an Easter egg.
We can get some 90s clip art and just like
make a $15 ebook that's just fucking garbage.
I can send, we can put up the picture of me as a 10-year-old in rollerblades with elbow pads and knee pads, and I look like fucking Big Bird.
It's Buy Your Way to Cool, and it's a 15-step thing that actually just tells you how to make a 15-step ebook and sell it on Amazon.
But we're giving you away the first step for free, because the first step
title.
Is buy this book.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, that's how you get
the name,
too.
That's the thing.
Too.
When you, it's like Buy Your Way to Cool. The secret is you already have accomplished step one. You're like, well, I got to figure out how did I do it? So you buy the book and it's congratulations. You've already completed step one.
Okay. So it's available. Buyyourwaytocool.com. But also buyyourwaynumber2cool.com is also available. And having it in the number two instead of the word two, though maybe a little bit confusing, is cooler. I don't know. You could do both. But Buy Your Way to Cool. Either option, totally available.
Hmm. And for the idiots out there, we might want to buy your way T-O-O cool.
Just to rewrote.
You gotta cover all your bases because you don't know where these people are going in their minds.
Yeah, and we spent our entire Patreon
and just instead of BUY, monthly. Just BY.
Some people might be so TWO too.
It's like just do the text version. It's just BYURWAY numeral 2 COOL or KEWL
or KOOL.
Yeah.
For those Mortal Kombat fans.
Right. Cigarettes. Yes. This was fun.
Yeah, it was good. Good time.
We'll just release this on Wednesday as a Microsoft.
It'll make my life so easy.
A starter's guide to being an entrepreneur.
Anybody else seen the new Muppet Show?
Yes.
Was it good?
I liked it.
It was pretty good, yeah. Yeah, it was a crazy thing. The preview that they released online as, you know, like here's like it was like the thing from San Diego that they
saw that
they released publicly, right? You know the premise. They come into the boardroom. They're like, oh, hey, they're going to do a show about us. We got to get Miss Piggy. She's a film actress now. Yeah, yeah. What's the trick? They I don't know how the fuck they had time to like refilm everything. They changed the entire premise of the show.
What?
Yeah. Huh. It's not about them like
getting... Now it's like The Office, basically, in the way that it's...
Right. It was still that it was meant to be a show in that format, this one was going to be about them getting a show. But in this case, it started like instead of them having that round table planning for they're not working on Miss Piggy's show. Like in the show now, they're working on Miss Piggy's talk show.
Like she's a big deal.
Yeah. Right. And they're all working on her show. But in the other one, they were going to do a brand new Muppet show, and the problem was they had to get Miss Piggy, who's a film actress.
I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, no, that kind of intrigued me because, you know, she's like, and you, whoever you are, goes, it's Gonzo. We've done, like, you know, 6 movies?
Yeah.
And like, no, I don't remember you. It's like, I thought that was funny.
And they had Topher Grace in it and, like, everything.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
How does Topher Grace feel about being cut out?
I don't know. I love the original premise, and this one's good, too. They actually cannibalize jokes from some of those scenes as they're getting things started.
Yeah, didn't they do something with Gonzo?
Gonzo had the joke about like
he had the
cutaway thing.
I love that. Yeah, because that was such a great mechanic.
Yeah, I hate those. I love them. What a good idea. But there was like good jokes and so on. But it was just weird because I thought the original premise was stronger, and now they switched premises to Miss Piggy has a talk show. The Muppets are working on the talk show, and we'll see where it goes.
You know, the way everybody has been talking about the whole Kermit getting a new girlfriend and ditching Miss Piggy.
Shit.
Right,
like, no, but the way that everybody's been talking about it, I thought the Muppets season was like half over. I thought I was getting into it late.
Oh,
but it just started.
Right, yeah.
How have people been talking about this for months?
Because that was a plot element of the stuff that they released earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, and they've been doing a bunch of promos around like them being broken up.
They were making it seem like it has been like a really well developed plot line or something. And
no.
I thought it was much further along than it actually is.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's first episode. Like, and they've, you know, those guys.
Is Fozzie's got a human girlfriend too now or something?
Oh, yeah.
And people were like, this is weird. Oh, we don't like this. It's like, dude, it's the fucking Muppets.
I thought that storyline was great. Like it was a guess who's coming to dinner with a Muppet. I mean, that's fucking genius.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Million Moms thing hardly bears mentioning, but the fact that there's a group of people protesting that this show is aimed at adults and that's fucked up because Muppets are for kids. Fucking ignorant fuckers. The first Muppet special was called Sex and Violence. It was a Valentine special in the 1970s. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know. Idiots. But the show's good. I hope it keeps it up. I'm just really confused. Like that really confused me. How they were able to, because like they showed that preview at Comic-Con only a few months ago.
I thought that was like, here's a sneak peek at the first half of the first episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I'm like, oh, great. I want to see the rest of that. And now it's like, that wasn't even it.
No.
I mean, this also almost doesn't really make any sense to me. Like, why would they be working as staffers on a Miss Piggy show when they all had a show together like this, at some point?
I would rather get the fake behind the scenes look at how do you make the Muppet show.
Right.
Like that to me sounds...
Yeah, and maybe that'll be like a mid-season plot thing of like Miss Piggy gets canceled and they got a I don't know. It's just weird because I thought they even showed like maybe they just filmed portions of scenes for the preview stuff, but they filmed stuff of them getting the group together. There was the shot of Miss Piggy decides that, oh yeah, no, I am going to like the actress thing. She was playing it off like it was going really well, but it actually wasn't. So she comes back to the Muppets and they're all supposed to thank her. And there's a scene where she's walking into the to the building and accidentally runs into a door because it was too clear, and it leaves this big makeup puff of like a pig snout on the door. Yeah. It was so good, and that's not in the show because that whole plot, that whole scene, that whole plot's gone. Somehow they retrofitted the entire show. I just don't know.
Is
how
it
they
possible
filmed it.
That was in the future of this?
I don't see how.
What if Miss Piggy gets involved in some sort of a scandal and she gets canceled, and then like between the seasons or something, there's like a time jump?
Maybe.
But
would insinuate that they filmed a lot of stuff ahead of time, but then why lift jokes from a deleted scene from a future episode?
That's true.
It's really strange.
I could see them revisiting it, though, because Miss Piggy's, I mean, kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So I could easily see her getting into some sort of a scandal and then just, like, getting her show taken away.
Yeah. I'd believe it. I want to see more. I enjoyed it enough, but it's just so weird. It's such a weird thing. And I'm sure that Muppet Central, the Muppet fan site, is like probably has all the answers for me. But I haven't dove into the forums to figure out what that. Okay, guys, I'm new here. What the fuck just happened? Like,
yeah.
What's the answers? I'm sure they probably know, but I haven't figured it out yet. If you know what's up with that, let us know. Leave a comment. So I saw Turbo Kid this past weekend. I'd seen a trailer online.
Wait, you saw the whole movie?
Yeah, I saw the whole film. Yep.
Oh.
Yes. In the theater, yes. It's been in the festival circuit for a while, and I saw the trailer online. Really impressive, like, retro future wasteland pastiche of 80s, 90s themes, nerdy themes generally. We'll link to the trailer on this episode's page. It's, in short, it's about a world after a global disaster. Humanity's really funky, really spread out. They only ride bicycles, and this one kid who's living alone is obsessed with a comic book character who is also a real-world hero called Turbo Rider, who rode a cool BMX bike and had this, like, gauntlet that shot lasers, and they were fighting some robots. But the world he's in now, it's got, like, dudes with gauntlets that shoot saw blades and, like, all kinds of just, like, funky trial by fire Thunderdome shit.
Yeah, from the trailer, it looked exactly like Mad Max meets Kick-Ass.
Yeah, that's a fair combo. But it's good. It's really good. I loved this movie. Keep an eye out for it. It's making the rounds in like art theaters, and it could potentially get a wider release as well. It's an indie film. There's really no knowns there except for the lead villain, who's Michael Ironside. Doug, you have some feelings about this. You haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
So it's not fair for me to judge the film. So I'm not going to judge the film. I'm just going to say that it reminded me of Kung Fury, and I'm like the only person I know who was really disappointed by Kung Fury.
Yeah, you're straight up wrong.
Because, well, no, I don't feel like I'm wrong. I just feel like
sometimes you don't feel like you're wrong when you're totally wrong.
Well, it's just that I get no entertainment from pure nostalgia.
Right.
It's like Kung Fury is nothing but nostalgia, and it's, hey, look at that. Doesn't that make you think of that? Yeah, but where's the joke? Like, where's the story? What's happening? Why am I watching it? But with Turbo Kid,
you probably didn't like Far Cry Blood Dragon either.
I didn't play it.
So I don't know if you would even want to, because it's the same thing. It's like Kung Fury the video game almost.
At least Kung Fury the video game would be interactive instead of a passive experience.
Yes.
If you're not familiar with Kung Fury, it was a film funded on Kickstarter. It's kind of like Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, in that it's a live action thing that's done with tons and tons of CGI compositing in a world almost like a cartoon reality of a retro future sort of deal. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, arcade cabinets and hacking time and being really cool, fighting Nazis, laser beams.
And you are literally describing the plot. That is not, oh, it's about that. It's like, no, that happens. There is no story.
It's only 30 minutes long.
It's three vignettes of unrelated scenes, whereas, like, the music video, I thought the music video was great. And, like,
the music video is great.
The music video is great.
They got David Hasselhoff to do a new hit single that is amazing.
The music video encapsulates everything that is the movie
in a really short
3
form.
Minutes. Yeah. Yeah, because that's all it is. It's like, I love pancakes, but I'm not going to go to an all-you-can-eat pancake buffet.
Why not?
You totally should.
Yeah, that sounds Fantastic.
It's a good idea.
After the second plate, I'm experience. Let me guess, more pancakes.
It's a good idea, man.
If you can get different pancakes, sure. If you can say, I want blueberry this time or chocolate chip pancakes. But no, it's just the same.
If that's not an option, you're going to a shitty pancake buffet.
We need to take him to the sugar mill.
Yeah, yeah. You got to go to the old
sugar mill. Fine. But that's what I'm saying. Kung Fury was a shitty pancake buffet for me because it was the same thing every scene. It was just the same thing over and over and over again.
I feel like Kung Fury is, in many ways, a modern incarnation of the cartoon realities of Airplane and Naked Gun, but in a completely different visual scenario. Because it's just
Naked Gun had jokes.
So did Kung Fury, but
Kung Fury was like the worst of Family Guy to me. Kung Fury, where it's like, hey, you remember when people wore crazy hair and like you remember when they wore these weird outfits and oh, you remember the Power Glove? What if like the Power Glove made you go through time? Wouldn't that be cool? That's what that was. It's me sitting across from that guy is Kung Fury.
But you also learned about the Kung Fury fighting style and why it was so important.
You know what? I'll recant just to say that the one joke that I really did actually like, it got the one legitimate laugh out of me, was I'm going to have to defeat the greatest Kung Fu master that ever lived, Adolf Hitler, a.k.a. Kung Fuhrer. But they ruined that by putting that in the trailer for the Kickstarter video. So it's like it was the same thing. It's like I didn't get anything out of it, which is why I've been careful about Turbo Kid. Because the trailer was just more of like, hey, you like the 80s? I'm like, well, I was born there. And it's like, you like Mad Max? Yeah. And I like BMX movies and BMX bikes and, you know, whatever. Okay.
I can't say there's a BMX movie I've ever liked.
BMX Bandits?
No.
I don't know. Whatever. I like E.T. I consider E.T. is a BMX movie.
E.T. is a BMX movie? What?
I mean, I never heard of BMX movies as a genre, so I'll take that.
How do you get
okay,
more extreme but... than flying past the sun on a bike?
That's like saying
alien.
That Back to the Future is a DeLorean movie. It's not about DeLoreans.
That's the moon, man.
That's the moon.
Amblin Entertainment logo. It's a moon, man.
You guys gonna need to get educated because does go over the moon. He does go past the moon, but at the end they go past the sun. The whole group of them at the BMX scene of that movie. They're going over the sand dunes.
Fuck,
they go over.
He's right.
They go over cars. Yeah, and used to be being right. Kung Fury's dumb.
I never should have tried to out Doug. It was a mistake.
In the defense of Kung Fury, I will say, I think if it marketed itself as more of like an experimental thing of like, hey, we want to make this movie that is just like a 30-minute love of 80s sort of thing.
I always felt that the joke, the real overarching joke of Kung Fury was, look how extreme this is. We're taking this so far. It's so funny how far we've taken it, which is how I read it. Which is why I enjoy it so much, because I'm like, this is so ridiculous. They
I just
took
feel
it
like
so
the,
far.
The Kickstarter was like, we want to make a movie. I'm like, oh, dude, go make a movie. Yeah, for sure. But then what we got was like a 30-minute experiment that they – I don't want to read into it because I don't know what the production situation was. I don't know if they had money or didn't have money or if they never had an idea or if they did and they had to cut it down. I don't know. So I'm giving the benefit of the doubt, but –
So did you give money to the Kickstarter?
I almost did.
Is that where it's coming from?
Because I almost
buyer's remorse.
Like, yeah, like, thank you, this is what I got.
No, I almost gave them like 10 bucks because I'm like, this looks like it could be really cool. I want to see a feature-length movie where it's like something like Sin City where it's like there is like stories spun throughout. But even Sin City had, you know, its problems. But like I want to see like people unrestrained by a studio system to give nostalgia and comedy in a way that I would really appreciate as a nerd. Oh. But instead it was an art film, like an experimental film that just dabbled with 80s, you know? And that's why I felt like a letdown. Like, this isn't a movie. This is a 30-minute joke.
In their defense, they did spend about half their budget getting David Hasselhoff to do the music video.
And that maybe that's the problem. Maybe that other half of the budget. And the music was great. Like if it was just
not
a music
an actual
video.
Fact, by the way.
All right, fine. I believed it. That's how much I was like disappointed. But yeah, getting like the Lamborghini maybe the Lamborghini was CG. I don't know. But like having that with David Hasselhoff in the music video, spot on. I thought that was great. It said everything that the movie said. You know, and more legitimately because Hasselhoff was singing. Whereas in the movie, it's like Hasselhoff's the voice of the car because it's a joke. Hey, Hasselhoff was in the 80s.
That part at the end with Hasselhoff in it was the most throwaway scene bullshit part of the film. I hate that part.
I feel like the whole movie was throwaway, though. That's the thing. Like, your complaint about the Hasselhoff joke, that same explanation of why that joke falls flat, I apply to the rest of the film.
I don't know. I didn't take as critical of an eye to it, and I was just, like, giggling at how... ridiculous it was. And half an hour is a long enough period of time where it's like, I don't mind that it's just a stupid joke for half an hour.
Yeah, it may have been purely because of the expectations that I had, where it's like, Kickstarter says, we want to make a movie. And then, you know, a year goes by. I'm like, oh, that movie those guys were going to make? They did it? And it's done? Play immediately. I was excited. And then it's like, why is the timeline only 30 minutes long? Is this a movie? What is this? You know, and then it's like, oh, is this like a pilot for a proposed show? Then, no. It's just...
Well, I think you'll like Turbo Kid, and here's why.
Yes, so please, go into yes.
Because Turbo Kid is subdued, because Turbo Kid has all that, like, nostalgia. It takes place in 1997. Like, it's an alternate reality, 1997.
So, like, the future of the 80s.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. But the rotten, awful future. Everything's destroyed. There's acid rain. But it is an indie film. It has a low budget. And that puts it in the same wheelhouse as some of, say, what you might be your favorite low-budget sci-fi films of the 80s and 70s. So it's got a world that feels very small, very intimate, and all the ridiculous stuff that happens is special. It's a silly premise, but it's got a ton of heart, a lot of... And yeah, you can look to characters and things and be like, well, that's kind of feels like this one thing. There's... water's really precious in it, and you find out that the bad guy's grinding people into water. And, I mean, that's straight out of Tank Girl. And it was done better in Tank Girl, even. That's maybe one of the biggest failings of this film, was that
my reaction,
people into water.
Okay. My initial reaction was kind of, I'll see it if it's good, but I'm not going to get excited for it because right. I don't know. Again, me personally, the expectations, the aesthetic of, hey, 80s, you know, 80s technology and, you know, nerdy 80s things. Oh, by the way, Grindhouse. And it's like, do those really match up? I mean, from you seeing the movie, like, did it ever feel like it was schizophrenic in tone?
No, I'm very sensitive to pandering, but I don't like it. I don't like nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. Well,
apparently, I'm more sensitive to pandering than you are. And nostalgia, but
I really don't like nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. I don't like pandering, and this film, like, I'm okay with someone, you know, Turbo Kid. Feels more along the lines of what we want to do with Lightning Dogs insofar as the attitude of like that, like it's referential of a certain kind of nostalgia, of a certain kind of vibe, of a certain kind of mindset, a certain kind of plot, a certain kind of wacky characters, but it's its own thing enough that it was fun. I felt good about it. I enjoyed the experience.
I'm just looking for consistency.
Yeah, it's consistent.
Okay. Because it just seems like such a jarring thing to put in a blender to mix them together, like the over-the-top gore of like a Grindhouse, 70s Grindhouse movie, but yet have... the sleek sound in 80s, like, stylings and
the
colors.
The gore is over the top. It really is. But eventually, I don't feel that I should have, in a spoiler-free commentary, I should really explain why it feels right. But eventually, the over-the-top gore, I feel, validates itself.
Is it, like, Kick-Ass in that the over-the-top gore is funny? Like, do they keep a humor element to it?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
Like, it's ridiculous. It gets fucking silly.
Because, yeah, I mean, if it was going to be like a Grindhouse thing and just be gore for the sake of gore, I'd be like,
dumb. If I had not seen the trailer and Boar pitched it to me as Mad Max meets Kick-Ass, I'd be like, that sounds interesting. But when I saw the trailer, my instinct was to compare it to Kung Fury meets Hobo with a Shotgun. And those are two things I didn't care for.
Right.
So you see what I'm saying about consistency and tone and how...
Totally. I know. I think you would like this because it has characters, because it has moments, because it works. It's a functional film. And obviously...
Then cool. Yeah. Then I'll probably check it out. And I'll hate you even more if I don't like it.
You will lose a lot of trust in me.
Tony and I will have to kick you out of Lightning Dogs.
Oh, I am going to... We'll see about that, friend.
No, because I think Tony likes Kung Fury, so you guys are probably going to kick me out of Lightning Dogs. So that's more likely where it's going to go. I'll say, fine, I'm going to make my own show.
Lightning Dogs, if you're not familiar, is a concept we accidentally created on an episode of Nerdy Show where we, about a bunch of anthropomorphic dogs who travel to Earth, which is where they came from, their species, hundreds of years ago, only to find it a wasteland ruled over by mutants and the dreaded Glampire.
And we said, all that 80s nostalgia crap that everyone's shoveling now, what if it was actually good and served a purpose?
So we're still it's a project we're still developing. There's more info at lightningdogs.com. We got shout outs for new patrons. We got Stephen Williams. We got Robert L. Lickens. I'm not even like Lickens. L-I-K-I-N-S Lickens II. That's awesome.
This is awesome. There was a second. I didn't know there was a first.
Yeah. So those guys, they're new patrons to Nerdy Show. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. We should remind everybody that Patreon, you can subscribe to us. You support the entire Nerdy Show network, not just Nerdy Show, but all the other programming here. And we got different tiers. We got different things available, all kinds of bonus perks, outtakes and other stuff, exclusive access to the Nerdy Show Lounge, where you can help us come up with the topics that we populate this show with. But also,
it's the best way to say thank you to us, I guess. Is,
you unappreciative bastards.
Yeah, even a really small amount, like a dollar, means a ton to us.
Yeah,
it really does.
We want to emphasize that every little bit counts, and we've been seeing some dollar donations lately, and that's actually really important to us because, as we've mentioned in the past, most successful or most well-funded Patreon projects are largely people giving a dollar. So if that's all you can afford, that is okay. Do not be bashful. It will make a huge difference to us. But you guys got to team up.
Like a pyramid scheme? Get everybody you know?
Get everybody you know.
So if you find five people and they all give it the dollar.
But yeah, even if you can't give that dollar, don't feel bad. We'll still give you the content for free and everything.
Yeah.
Tell a friend.
Yeah, do tell a friend. Like, well, spread the word.
Well, tell a friend, but also shop via the Amazon links because that doesn't require you to spend anything you weren't already spending on Amazon anyway.
That's very true.
So if you can, a dollar's great. But if you can't, then just do your regular shopping on Amazon like you were going to do anyway. And you don't have to give anything.
And if you buy something like on Amazon that you want to say that you bought on Amazon, just shoot us a message. info@nerdyshow.com. Be like, yo, I did this crazy thing. And we're like, wow, thank you. We will thank you on the show. Just let us know.
And if you don't shop on Amazon, then just share it with a friend.
Yeah. And we mention all this because we are entirely listener supported. We rely on you. We have no corporate backing. The Legendary Pictures hasn't bought in on us like they bought in on Nerdist. So,
and if you don't have any friends, just write the web address nerdyshow.com on the inside of a bathroom stall.
That's okay. And take a picture and we'll post it.
Hashtag bathroom pictures.
I want to be clear. Please write it in pen or a marker.
Yeah, the pencil stuff will just get rubbed off.
Yeah, we want permanent. Maybe, I don't know, draw pictures with it too.
If you have a chisel.
And if you carve it in there, that's creepy, but we'll take it anyway.
Can we get in trouble for telling people to vandalize private property?
I think we can. So we want to throw in a little note that
disclaimer
says...
Disclaimer that was not serious.
Yeah, we're not serious about that.
You can write it in your own bathroom.
If you did do it, which is totally not cool, then we would still share it because we would be providing an example of what not to do.
Yes.
Yeah, do not hand it
over to the authorities, the toilet police.
We are definitely not proud that this is happening all over the place.
Right, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's what we would say.
Yeah. So I should mention, if you're following Nerdy Show Book Club, that's our show where we talk about the books we're reading and read books along with the whole Nerdy Show community. We got an episode coming up. Be sure to join in on the read-along, which is Neil Gaiman's Ocean at the End of the Lane. That's coming out, well, pretty soon, actually. I don't have an exact date yet for when that episode's coming out, but it's coming out in October. If you haven't checked it out yet, check out Liberty Critical Research, a new sci-fi audio drama that we've been doing on the show for about a couple months now.
I'm in the next episode.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm in episode 4 quite a bit.
Cool, and you might have already heard Hex in episodes 2 and 3. So Nerdy Show people are in it. Check it out. But big news, if you're hearing this, then there's already 4 episodes of the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program out. That is the long-awaited show where we play the classic tabletop role-playing game Call of Cthulhu. It was such a long recording, it was such a long session that we turned it into an 8-part miniseries, which is actually really cool because we had the chance to develop all these shorter-length episodes as old-timey radio dramas. So they've got that full framing device of being on radio. It was a lot of fun to put together. It's one of my favorite things we've done. So you should check it out, nerdyshow.com/Cthulhu, or if that's too hard to spell, because I've gotten used to it now, but it was there was some trial and error.
Is it COC?
If you just go to nerdyshow.com.
We didn't want to make it that easy. You have to pass the spelling test if you want to be able to listen to this.
Go to nerdyshow.com/theater or just go to nerdyshow.com and there's a podcast tab and it'll be listed there. But it's all there. It's coming out in 8 parts twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. Listen to it. Let us know what you think of the new format or the show itself or both. And check out the original score on our Bandcamp. It's pay what you want. If you pay anything, all that money goes to the composers themselves so they can keep making awesome music for Dungeons and Doritos and Call of Cthulhu and every other miniseries we're working on. And also, I published a big article in the past couple weeks that I'm not sure I mentioned yet, but my full report from Camp Fangamer. want to let everybody know about that, mostly because I fucking killed myself writing this thing. It's basically the equivalent of a magazine cover story. It's extensive because I was the only press representation at this event, like at least officially. And what it is an Earthbound convention. Super, super small. 400 people were there, put on by Fangamer. Earthbound, of course, is the classic cult RPG from Nintendo. Beloved series, and this was not just a convention where everybody goes to it because they're all fans of that thing, which it was, but it was an interactive experience with a narrative, much like a sort of a homegrown DIY secret cinema strung throughout the entire weekend.
An alternate reality game going on during the whole thing.
Basically, yes,
right?
An alternate reality game and this whole interactive narrative as well. It was amazing. It was just truly incredible.
Yeah, it's a super in-depth article. You got a lot of good pictures from it.
Yeah. If you want to really grasp the true form of what was going on there, you're going to want to check it out. So we'll link to that on this episode's page, or you can find it in the articles tab under video games. So I guess that's a wrap for this episode of Nerdy Show.
I don't have any good rap lyrics.
Okay.
Do you want to rap, Doug?
I'm not a rapper, but I spit hot fire.
All right.
Jess, you want to throw down some beats?
They call me the hip-hop-opotamus because my lyrics are bottomless. That's all I got.
Well, to take us out, we've got a track. It's kind of rap, kind of. It's a brand new song from a brand new EP by Miss Paintbrush, who you may also know as Jackson of Grand Buffet, a nerdy rap outfit that, predated nerdcore as a genre and doesn't really exist within that genre at all. Very funky, strange raps. This is from his EP, Dead Osprey Sewer, and it's a track called Buckle Boots, and it's super weird, so please enjoy.
Listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud, or give us your feedback at nerdyshow.com/survey. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Well, since we're talking about crotch boxes, how do you guys feel about how do you guys feel about how getting a Pacific Rim job right about now?
Whoa.
Feeling good?
I was going to say you could transition from from the future and then Laser Razor in a film about the future. And there is a film that is called Back to the Future that it ties into
fairly well. Then take it, Doug. Take it like you mean it.
Speaking of crotch box and rim jobs, you guys like Back to the Future?
No. Conversation over.